He's involved in a number of businesses.
He's a great role model.
Telling it like it is, giving you both sides of the story. This is Katz at Night.
Great American, a great New Yorker.
Now, here's John Katzimatidis.
This is Katz at Night, WABC, number one show at 5 o'clock now, and we're glad to be here to give you all the news, everything that's going on in the New York tri-state area and the world. With us in the studio, Lydia Serrano. How are you, Lydia?
I'm doing well, sir.
Kevin McCullough today.
Hello, Mr. Katz.
Heading up the Tri-Broadcast.
Yeah, the Tri-Cast. One of the reasons you're the number one 5 o'clock show is because you got more people listening to you than anybody else.
We got more people in the studio.
Pretty much, too.
We have Ed Cox, the 10-year chairman of the GOP.
Nothing's going on here in New York. All quiet. Yeah.
And Judge Richard Weinberg. How are you, Judge?
Nice to be back again. Thank you.
And we have a lot to talk about amongst ourselves of what the heck is going on, boy. But our first guest
is Michael Goodwin, and he is a famed New York Post columnist. His latest column, Andrew Cuomo is a heel who could never fill his dad's shoes. This first line that you have in the article, watching Andrew Cuomo's resignation speech Tuesday, it was impossible not to wonder what his father, Governor Mario Cuomo, would have thought. Welcome, Michael Goodwin.
Thank you all.
Tell us about your
article. We've got a full house in the studio. I mean, I know. Next join us. You're welcome.
It's like speaking to an audience. I mean,
the number one audience.
Right. That's it.
Hey, Michael, it's Kevin. I'm dying to ask you this. You knew the father. What do you think his thoughts are about the son today?
Well, it would be hard for Mario, I believe, to stomach what's happened to his son. Andrew, I quote in the column things that Andrew said at his eulogy for Mario in 2015, and they were about that Mario had no tolerance for anyone who demeaned public service, cheap tricks, scandals, corruption. And, of course, this is now the story of his son. I didn't agree with Mario on a lot of things. He was argumentative. He could be very difficult, but he was smart, and you could trust that he was coming from a place of honest belief. That's not what we saw with Andrew, especially in recent years, as he just became unbelievable in the worst sense of that word. Even his speech yesterday, his resignation speech, was just full of lies. And so whatever happened to Andrew, I think, is something of a mystery in many ways. I mean, the simple version is that power corrupts and third terms corrupt absolutely. But I think it's more than that. I think that Andrew had some kind of a chip on his shoulder, some inferiority complex, and he just had to feed it, and there was never enough. And so his controlling mechanisms, the retaliation, threats, bullying, and then, of course, the groping and the sexual harassment. I mean, it's all of a piece in a very sad way. And so, you know, I try to imagine. I mean, his mother is still alive, Matilda, and it must just be heartbreaking for her to see. Look, I can't imagine that anyone believes Andrew is innocent of these charges. I mean, it boggles the mind. You can say that the investigators didn't do this or didn't do that, but you have 11 women coming out telling similar experiences, and it's just there's no way that they're all lying. There's no way that they all misunderstood something.
You know, Michael, Ed Cox, it was said in the legal community that Mario Cuomo was as happy behind a desk at a major law firm as he was being governor. That's the way he saw power. It was for a purpose, and the son was absolutely the opposite. But do you believe, with respect to his resignation speech, that it was actually a campaign speech looking forward to what he might want to do in 2022?
Perhaps, Ed, but I think it's more likely he's simply trying to save face. I mean, the idea that, you know, he's innocent, but he can't fight in this climate. Now, who resigns when they're innocent? Who resigns a governorship when you're innocent? It's just, it, it doesn't pass the smell test. And don't forget that the investigators said of Andrew Cuomo that his testimony was not credible. And we saw for the days before yesterday, since the report came out a week ago yesterday, and until yesterday, we had not seen him. He sent lawyers out, but he had himself had not come out to defend himself. He had done a tape interview, a tape statement the day of the release. But what kind of governor can't come out to defend himself and sends lawyers out to defend himself? I mean, you're a governor, for goodness sake. You're not a, you're not some kind of a corporate CEO who's trying to minimize bad publicity. You're a governor. You can't hide behind lawyers. And yet that's what he did. So there was just the unwinding of it all. Look, obviously the most serious thing was the nursing home deaths. And the order for the health department, and it is still being pursued, as far as we understand, by the U.S. Attorney in Brooklyn, over the hiding of the numbers.
The cover up,
yeah.
The cover up was, yeah.
Yeah, and a cover up while he was getting $5 million for a book,
that he solved the problem.
Exactly.
With a golden touch.
Yeah, which also...
And using state employees to help do it. Yeah. I mean, it's just the list of things doesn't end.
Mike, it's Richard Weinberg. How are you?
Good. Thank you, Richard. Yourself?
Good. So what I think is most interesting is the fact that there's some push both among some Democrats and amongst the Republicans to keep forward on the impeachment process, to impeach him and then bring forth a trial as well, even though he's leaving office. Because under the New York State Constitution, like the federal constitution, if he's a...
Can they impeach him after he resigns?
Well, that's the impeachment
papers are not going to be ready to the end of the month.
Well, yes, that's the legal question, and there's an argument both ways on that, John. But the interesting thing is, if he is removed from office, then impeached and convicted, he's forever barred from holding office in the state of New York, which is an analog to the federal constitution provision about impeachment and conviction.
Right.
Yes, yes. Look, I think he would not have resigned had he not counted the votes and realized he was headed for impeachment in the assembly, which would have required him to step aside. Again, a break with the federal system. He would have had to step aside temporarily until the trial in the Senate was over. You would also have the seven judges from the state court of appeals sitting as jurors. It's a kind of crazy quilt system that New York has, and it probably would have been looked at had it not laid untouched for more than a century. The last time it was used, I believe, was 1913. So there would have been some drama, I think, around the process itself. But fundamentally, I believe Andrew Cuomo took his own poll of the assembly, saw the public polls on how the public viewed him. Don't forget, the first two polls out, one had 59% wanting him to resign. The second, within 3 days, had 70% wanting him to resign. So he didn't have much wiggle room at all. And I think that he resigned rather than face the almost certain impeachment and conviction and removal. Now, does he intend to run again? I don't know. I don't think he knows. I think there's a lot of bravado about him and about that idea. But he's got a lot of things to clean up. He still has these federal investigations. There are other investigations about the use of the book, about the money. He may be trying to put up a brave front, which I think part of that speech was about, that maybe I'll be back kind of thing. You know, look at all the great things I did. But I think that was more about saving face than saving a position in the future.
Michael, I don't think you can miss the concept that he can be very self-delusional. And the one thing he wants to do is go where his father didn't go, and that's to a fourth term and then to the presidency.
And
I have to say that's still in the back of his mind, and he's deluding himself.
To that very point, and Michael, you're interested in your thought on this. Don't you think that there is a certain degree of lesson for everyone that watches this, mm-hmm. that when you treat people badly, when you're a bully, There's no one to stand with you when the chips really are down. And that's kind of, I didn't know his father, but from what I've read about his father and seen about his father, it was a completely different, he had friends everywhere, and Andrew had none.
Well, no, it's like, you know the story I usually tell? The Bill Clinton story. When he was ready to fall over the cliff, there was 1,000 people there.
Ready to catch
him. To hold his hand so he doesn't fall over the cliff. Because they basically liked the guy.
Yeah.
Look, Mario Cuomo interacted with former President Nixon.
Yeah.
And they did, and he consulted with them, and he had lots of friends and lots of, not just in the Democratic Party, but other.
But Michael, there was such a reputation with Andrew in terms of how he dealt with people, and that just that dooms you.
Well, I some time back I quoted an insider saying that he had 100 in Albany, 100 accomplishments, and not a single friend. And, you know, leave aside for the second if he had 100 accomplishments, but the second part of that is definitely true. And, again, I think all this came home to roost, and I think he was probably shocked that, you know, that they were able to do this to him, that the movement to get rid of him was able to get off the ground. I think he believed he could scare Carl Heastie, maybe not Stuart Cousins of the Senate, but I think he believed that the Assembly would not go for this. And when it became clear, and I think that a lot of people have missed the significance of the Tish James report. What it did was it took these allegations that came out sort of raggedy in the press by and large and investigated them and essentially turned them into facts. And that was a big moment. And I talked with people at the Post. I said, you know, I think our language, we have to be careful now. He's no longer facing a set of allegations. That's what he was facing before the report was finished. He's now facing findings that corroborated those allegations. That's a whole different kettle of fish. And that's why I believe the Assembly said, that's it, we're done. Before that, you know, he had more than a fighting chance. But once that report came out and the public polls started to come out, it all collapsed in, 48 hours.
Yeah. I think that may be the reason, Mike, why he didn't go out and speak to this. Because I think his lawyers understood the distinction that you're making. And his lawyers said, let us do the talking, because anything you say can and will be used against you and can impeach prior statements. I think that's a real concern. And as a lawyer, I would tell my client, stay silent. Let us do the speaking for you.
Michael Goodwin, this is Lydia Serrani. My favorite line of your article is Cuomo's comeuppance was inevitable because his high ambition was not matched by high character.
Hmm. The ancient Greeks said a man's fate is his character.
Right. And that's the next sentence. And I don't quote the Greeks, but next sentence
you're
in the column.
You're anti-Greek, though. That's all.
Some of our best friends are Greek.
That's right. But I wasn't going to be so presumptuous as to cite the origin of it. But it is true, I believe, that character is destiny. Character is fate. And particularly in public life. And, you know, as John said earlier with Bill Clinton, I mean, he had giant character flaws, too, but he genuinely liked people. And everybody he talked to felt that he was totally listening to them. And when he was talking to them, that he was only thinking about them. And there's a very funny story of one woman, young woman, said that, you know, she was on one of these receiving lines and she gets to Bill Clinton and she can swear that he's coming on to her in the 15 seconds they're shaking hands. and then she watches and there's an 85-year-old woman behind her and she swears he's coming on to her too.
Probably right in both cases.
Well, her point was that's who he is. He just gives you all his attention and you really feel special in that moment. And Andrew Cuomo didn't make people feel special. You know, obviously the people he was squeezing, they felt repulsed.
Mm. Well, Andrew Cuomo was his father's Prococo, and I think he always regretted not being available for that fourth, going for that fourth term, because he didn't have his Prococo there. But Andrew kept going on, and when he was running himself, he was still basically Prococo.
Well, you know, he mentioned that in his eulogy, that he was sorry that he it was a mistake for him not to show up for his father's fourth campaign.
Yeah.
He blamed himself.
For his father losing the fourth.
Wow. Yes.
Yeah.
And his father, you never know, he might have won the fourth time. Who knows?
Michael, you're a bit of a prognosticator. Just real quickly, what's your take on where the Democratic field sits now for 2022? Because you've got a lot of people licking their chops that weren't 3 days ago.
You mean in New York?
Yes.
Governor's race.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think just first of all, this is quite a moment for New York. You have Eric Adams likely to be the Democratic mayor. Not yet, but the Democratic nominee, and a talking about crime, and now you have a party that has just thrown out one of its leading lights in Andrew Cuomo. So it is a very different Democratic Party now. It's obviously got the same splits in New York as it has nationally with the far left and everything. I mean, with AOC, you could say the far left was born here. But I think it is different. I would not be surprised to see Bill de Blasio running in the gubernatorial primary. I would think Letitia James would also, and Hochul will probably be a candidate. So I think those three will probably be the first three, and who knows who else will run. But it's going to be different when you lose that big incumbent power. And it is still a blue state, but I think it makes the race winnable for a Republican. More winnable today
AOC,
than it was 2 days ago.
You don't think AOC is enjoying her new position as leader of the United States Senate?
I don't think she needs to be governor, does she? She doesn't even need to be senator.
She's pushing everyone
I
around.
Have one last question, guys, and I'm going to ask everybody in this room. It's a yes or no question.
Mm-hmm.
If Andrew Cuomo, on any of those women's cases, went to a regular court of law, would he have been found innocent or guilty? Judge?
I have to look at all the facts and then apply the
no,
law to the facts.
No, but your gut feeling.
I can't answer. I have to look at each individual allegation.
No, there's it.
There's a lawyer.
I think that was particularly the one charge that has now been filed. It'll end up as he said, she said.
Yes.
And that's not beyond a reasonable doubt, innocent. And I think that would then say, see, I'm innocent. And that would fuel
well,
his
desire. In other words, there was
run.
No witnesses.
Exactly.
If there's no
he
witnesses.
Says, that's,
yeah.
that's the point.
He said,
yeah.
she said. Yeah. So, Judge, how can you say?
Well, because I have to be judicious.
Okay.
John, I don't think this is about his guilt in the
yes
harassment.
Or no.
I don't think he gets convicted on those, but I think
but
as people
civil,
in New York
that's what we're talking about,
okay.
sex. Well, Lydia, you're the woman in the group.
I say not guilty, which is very different than being found innocent.
Correct.
I say
correct. I'm with you.
It's yes. I'm not saying he'll be found innocent, but I would say not guilty because you don't have enough
right.
facts.
Can I make a quick suggestion?
Absolutely.
Read the Tish James report, because it breaks down into every one of these allegations. And in these cases, it's not just he said, she said. It's contemporaneous notes. It's other conversations that she had, things that other people may have
people
said.
People that they said to other...
She told people right away. So there's a wider range than just
it's that lady again talking to her girlfriend.
It depends how many of those actually get into court.
That's
and
exactly
at the moment,
right.
only one yeah. would get into court. It's only on a misdemeanor, and it's he said, she said, and if he's innocent, then...
And don't forget,
that
forget
will fuel
so
his
far,
ambitions.
So far, the discussion is about criminal exposure. There's also
there's
going to
be a
civil
ton of
lawsuits,
civil, yeah,
a whole bunch of civil
it
lawsuits.
It also depends on the
break,
jury.
Guys.
If
we
you have a bunch of Italian
Michael
guys,
Michael Goodman, thank you so much, and we're going to take a break.
A my pleasure.
Thanks,
thank
Michael.
And when
right.
we come
thank
back,
well.
We're going to have Frank Caron, one of the right hand people of possible new mayor Eric Adams.
Talk Radio 77.
And you're back to Cats at Night on 77 WABC, AM 970 The Answer, and out on Long Island, 107.1 FM, WLIR. Big studio gathering here in the WABC studios. But, John, our next guest is, he knows everyone that's a mover and a shaker in the Democratic Party, and he's very close to Eric Adams. In fact, there was a very interesting article in Crain's today about why the new governor, Kathy Hochul, is going to need Eric Adams. Please welcome Frank Caron to Cats at Night. Hi, Frank.
How are you? Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Hello, John. Hello everyone.
So
how
what,
are you? We have a full house in the studio. We got Ed Cox here. We have Richard Weinberg, Lydia, me. Tell us what's going on in Brooklyn, what's going on in New York City, and what's going on with Eric Adams.
Thank you, John. Hello, Ed. Hello, Lydia. Yeah. So, John, this is a really interesting time, and I don't think it's really an exaggeration to say that it's, you could argue, unprecedented. And if we take a step back for a moment and just think about what's happening at the moment, we have, at the same time, a governor resigning. We have a potential new mayor coming in. We expect it to be Eric Adams. We hope it's Eric Adams, although there's a general election, and Eric's working very, very hard getting his message across the city for that general election. But there will be a new mayor, a new governor, and also, first of its kind, enormous infrastructure bill, which passed the Senate through the Senate yesterday. We spent the day looking at the contents therein. So we have the cross-section of federal government passing this incredible bill, which is going to provide enormous resources. We'll see how those resources translate into services for the great state that we all love and live in. New mayor and new governor. So it's quite an interesting time.
Tell us, there's so many problems between Albany and our city. Will Eric Adams be able to get along with Hochul to straighten things out? I remember we had a discussion last week. We had Mr. Carnegie here in the studio, and we were talking to him. There's $2.7 billion in Albany that was supposed to be allocated to store owners, restaurant owners, to pay their rent, et cetera, et cetera. And nobody knows where this $2.7 billion is.
It's incredible, John, and you're right. Look, governor resigning under these circumstances is never a good thing for the people in the state of New York, but it was the right thing for him to do at that moment so that the state can get back to the business of working for the people. And Lieutenant Governor Hochul, soon to be Governor Hochul, she seems like a pragmatic public servant who will likely be a friend of New York City. I know that Eric spoke to her recently. He's certainly looking forward to working with her. He's confident that he will be able to work with her. He believes, and we believe, that she is the kind of practical elected official. They're right in line with the politics of Eric and, of course, our president. So we believe there's tremendous opportunities for partnership between the incoming governor and incoming mayor.
Ed?
The dynamic between Governor Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio was not pretty, and a lot of it was gratuitous. There's always a tension between the governor and the mayor, but a lot of it, particularly on the part of Governor Cuomo, and that character is now fully exposed to the public here. What do you think that dynamic will be between new governor, between at the moment it will be Governor Hochul, and the presumptive new mayor, or at least the Democratic candidate who will probably win the mayoralty here?
Yeah, that's a great observation, great question. Truthfully, there will be stories and books written about the acrimony between the governor and the mayor. It's been well documented. It's gone on for many, many years. And it's really a lesson in how not to behave and how not to conduct yourself between two elected officials. It should never be personal. And Eric is not a type of elected official who takes things personally. He knows he has a job to do. He'll do it. He'll stay focused. And we're going into this relationship with the best of intentions. And I doubt very much you'll see anything remotely close to the acrimony that you saw between Governor Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio, for whatever reasons that both of them will describe why that occurred.
Frank, it's Richard Weinberg. How are you?
Hey, Richard. How are you?
Good. Thank you. So what I think is very, very interesting is the amalgamation of power that's occurring in Brooklyn. You have three of the citywide officials are from Brooklyn. You have the Senate Majority Leader, Chuck Schumer, from Brooklyn. You have a potential speaker of the United States House of Representatives in Hakeem Jeffries. You have a dynamic, and you know this for practicing law in Brooklyn and being active in community affairs, and the Brooklyn Bar Association, you have all the young people looking at Brooklyn as a very, very desirable place. And there's a recent article talking about Brooklyn is the new in-borough and Manhattan is the out-borough. What are your comments on that?
That's you hear this all the time, and there's some good reasons for that. And first, you know, Brooklyn is, if not the largest, close to it, largest Democratic county in the United States of America. So it's not a small place, right? It's a very large place, and particularly in Democratic politics, the largest Democratic county in the United States. So it's not without reason. But I joke around recently that we still don't have a president of the United States, and obviously at the moment anyway, not a governor. So we have room to grow.
Well, we have a minute left because we have taken another break. We have Congressman Zeldin calling in on the next break. We got a minute. Tell us what you think.
Well, I think that we're going to use this opportunity to really serve our great city. We all love it. We're going to, and we know that it has a lot of potential. Needs a lot of improvement in many, many ways between safety, cleanliness, economics, equity. So a new governor, new mayor, and of course, like as you mentioned, Akeem Jeffries, an incredible House of Representatives and senatorial team that's made sure that they deliver necessary resources. And we're going to do our best to make sure New York gets its fair share.
Well, thank you so much, Frank Caron, and God bless you. And Brooklyn is one of my favorite boroughs, and God bless Brooklyn, and we'll talk again real soon.
Thank you all. Thanks for having me again. Speak soon.
Bye. Let's take a break, and when we come back from the break, we got Lee Zeldin calling in, and we're just going to have a quick message with him.
John Katzenmatidis, 77 WABC.
Now with us is Congressman Lee Zeldin. It's been an interesting day, and we'd like to see what kind of comments he has. Congressman, how are you?
I'm doing well, John. It's great to be with you. I'm having a much better day than Andrew Cuomo is. I hope you are as well. I actually am surprised that Cuomo didn't realize this earlier, that resignation was the only way to go. Got to tell you, I mean, the way the announcement was made, he's clearly trying to skirt accountability as opposed to resigning in order to hold himself accountable, continuing to fight on the way out, and accusers continuing to be attacked, investigators continuing to be attacked. But the reality was that he was almost certainly going to be impeached with the direction that was heading. Even if he wasn't, he would lose next year, and he had to resign. It's a good thing that he made the announcement that he did today. It's a little bit of closure, but it's not all of it. You still have thousands of families who lost loved ones due to the nursing home order, upset about the cover-up, wanting accountability there. People upset about that $5 million-plus self-congratulatory book deal. And off the AG's report, all the accusers, those women, they're still seeking accountability beyond this. And there are investigations going on by local district attorneys, because what the AG reported last week was that state and federal laws were broken. She was meeting the elements in the description of crimes like forcible touching. So for Andrew Cuomo, he might have made a decision to step down from the governor's office today. But I don't believe that the right answer is that's the end of all of this, and there's nothing else to see here, there's nothing else to talk about here, and we just move on like none of this happened.
Do you think that he got a deal that if you go away, we won't indict you or we won't impeach you, or et cetera, et cetera?
There is no information to support that. There have been people who have come out and said that they are not going to do deals, that they're not talking to the governor's office about deals. Speaker Hastie, Assemblyman Levine, who runs the Assembly Judiciary Committee, are two of the people who have made comments like that. As far as the criminal side of things, I just don't have anything to back up that theory.
Understood. What else would you like to tell all New Yorkers? I mean, you're running for governor, and do you think there's going to be 17 Democrats standing up and saying we want to run too?
I think there's going to be a very crowded Democratic Party primary, and there are different dynamics of the Democratic primary field and the voting base. You have the Democrats who live in New York City who might think that AOC is doing a fantastic job and that the party needs to be moved further left. And then you have a whole lot of other Democrats who feel like the party has left them and this isn't the same Democratic Party that they had registered for. We still have New Yorkers all across the state who are hitting their breaking point. And just because Andrew Cuomo decided that he is going to resign now, that doesn't change the reality of the individuals who are concerned about rising crime in their neighborhood, and they want to repeal cashless bail. They want to keep qualified immunity for the men and women who are concerned about their son or daughter's education. This doesn't change that fight for improving quality education and ending this push towards indoctrinating or brainwashing students. This doesn't make it any better for that small business owner who is having trouble finding employees to come work. They have able-bodied adults in their community, but the government is paying more to incentivize them to stay at home. So these struggles of everyday New Yorkers that people have been talking about throughout our entire campaign since I announced on April 8th, their troubles haven't gone away. We know in many respects what we're getting with the lieutenant governor who will be taking over as the acting governor. And she's been silent, empowering a lot of this from scandal to scandal. She's capitalized on it and becoming the lieutenant governor, and now will become the acting governor because of it. So I believe that there are a lot of
She's definitely been the acting governor. She would have been acting governor if he was impeached. Now
right. She's going to be the governor. Correct. Yeah, she'll become the 57th governor of the state. And you're right, and there's no indication that she has moderated positions, that she's going to be fighting to address any of those issues that I just mentioned. Is she going to be fighting to repeal cashless bail? Does she want to eliminate critical race theory from every school in the state of New York going forward? All of these key issues that New Yorkers are talking about, is she going to speak out against lockdown policies and what we just saw come out of New York City from Bill de Blasio, who he wants to implement, where a struggling small business owner is going to have to turn down a paying customer and they're barely surviving? She has a little bit of breathing room to come in and do good things. But we already know what we're getting with her in a large respect. So, she might not have as much rope as she hopes or wants. And if she's just going to continue the direction of one-party Democrat rule in Albany, which is the way this is looking, then New Yorkers are still going to be wanting change and talking about the same issues that have them motivated supporting our campaign already.
Understood. Congressman Lee Zeldin, thank you for your comments, all New Yorkers, and God bless you, and we all love New York, and we hope New York makes a tremendous comeback, and we'll talk again real soon.
Yes, sir. Thanks, John.
Thank you. And we have a new guest in the studio. Now we have, 11 people here. We have Larry Kudlow. Larry, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. Appreciate it.
What's going on, Larry? I mean,
I came in to cut an ad.
And John puts you to work.
That's got to be good, right?
He said, sit down. That's it.
Profits are good.
Tell us, how did Wall Street at an all-time high today?
Profits are booming. Money is easy and free. And until any of this crazy, insane legislation gets passed, the street is in good shape. Stocks are in good shape. Fundamentals are good. We're in a boom. The economy is booming. Consumers are booming. Businesses are booming. Stock market is booming. Unfortunately, inflation is booming. And for all those reasons, for every single one of those reasons, not only if it's not broke, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, this reconciliation or budget resolution package that passed the Voterama last night in the Senate is absolutely the worst economic policy imaginable. It is completely divorced from economic conditions. And I might add, polls are starting to show that voters get it. More spending equals inflation, and the middle class is going to shoulder all of the tax hikes proposed by Mr. Biden and Mr. Schumer and Ms. Pelosi. So it's a terrible, that part of it is a terrible story.
Now,
X that out.
There's an open item. There's an open item. And I asked the judge and I asked Ed Cox, who's in the studio with us, if they pass a $3.5 trillion bill and it exceeds the
debt limit.
Do they need 60 votes to go above the debt limit? I mean, they could pass 20 trillion, but if they need 60 votes to go beyond the debt limit, then they're only mentally masturbating.
Well, as far as the mental masturbation, that's going to cover a lot of ground. We probably don't have enough time for that. The debt limit can be put into budget reconciliation, or they can suspend the debt limit for as long as they want. And so it's a non-starter. I mean, look, one thing I got to say, it's not a $3.5 trillion package. When the CBO scores this over the 10-year period, which is the window of the budget deal, it will come to over $5 trillion. I don't know how much taxes they're going to ask. It's going to be a minimum of $3 trillion in taxes, and the middle class is going to pay for that. Okay, virtually every nickel. But the debt ceiling is not a barrier. It's not an impediment. It is the least of the issues. I think it makes good politics. I had Senator Johnson on our Fox Business show this evening, and he's got 46 Republicans signing a letter saying they're not going to vote for any debt ceiling extensions. But it's of no consequence. It'll be whatever they want it to be.
So with the $3.5 trillion, and
$5 trillion plus,
right? Is that going to change the equation? Powell now says that inflation is temporary. It's a supply-demand thing. Does that make it more permanent, or talking about permanent inflation?
It's not going to
70s help. All over again?
I don't know if it's the 70s. Actually, it's different than the 70s, because the 70s was much more the collapse of the dollar and the end of the Bretton Woods gold-dollar exchange system.
I wonder who did that.
But yeah, well, I've written op-eds, but I love you, and I'm not going to talk about that today. And your bride. Look, more spending will put more pressure on the Fed to buy the government debt that will support the spending. It's called monetization. It just means the Fed will buy the bonds and inject even more cash into the economy. We already have more cash than we know what to do with. Literally, banks and money market funds and others are going to the Fed with excess. They want to, here, take our excess cash. And the Fed is taking it for 5 basis points. It's called reverse repurchase agreements. They're trying to drain. They're literally saying, we can't handle this. Our vaults aren't big enough to hold all the excess cash. But on that point, Biden made a very important remark today. He was asked about the Federal Reserve and Jay Powell. And he said, if the Fed deems it appropriate, they will take whatever actions they need to take. Now, that's a loaded statement because it first of all implies that Biden knows inflation is a growing problem.
Mm-hmm.
If nothing else, his polls are declining and worker wages are getting hurt by this. Real wages are falling. Secondly, he's, I think, pulling a Kamala Harris here. So remember, he put Kamala Harris in charge of immigration at the border, and she did one heck of a job, right? We haven't heard from her since. He's basically saying today that Jay Powell and the Fed is the cause of inflation, and that they're going to take the burden, not me. It's their problem, not my problem. Now, to some extent, it is the Fed's problem, by the way, but to a greater extent, all the spending and deficits in debt will put the pressure on the Fed, as I said, to monetize. So there's a front page story there, how he's trying to transfer the burden.
And he made a statement this afternoon. He says, it's going to be paid by the rich Americans and the rich corporations.
Yeah, by the way, the Joint Tax Committee, which does all the tax analysis, and the Congressional Budget Office have both said that corporate taxes are paid by the middle class. In fact, the latest Joint Tax Committee is nearly 70% of corporate taxes are paid by people earning $500,000 or less. And the bulk of that group is not 500,000. The bulk of that group, you know, is probably 50, 75,000 to 200,000 because that's where the money is. You know, Willie Sutton, why do you rob banks? Because that's where the money is. It's the middle class that have the money. The top 1% doesn't have the money. They may be wealthy and successful, and God bless them. And he's not going to fool anybody. Corporations don't pay taxes. People pay taxes. Right.
Because the corporations reflect it back to the consumer.
That's right. And
as plain and simple.
Think of it this way. You taxing a business, that means the business will have lower profits. Okay? That means they'll have fewer profits to grant wages to the workforce, to grant build new plants and equipment and technology, so productivity is high. That means their profits won't be there for the stock market investors, and the share prices will go down. You're going to get, if this thing passes, the stock market will get slammed. And finally, they have to pass on the higher tax costs to consumers.
Absolutely.
In the form of higher consumer prices. And people, Rasmussen, Scott Rasmussen, one of the best pollsters in the business, just came out. He was on our Fox Business show this evening, and he said 61% of the middle class believes they will pay the higher taxes.
Absolutely.
The voters are smarter than the politicians, as always.
Larry, thank you for stopping by. They're forcing me to take a break, and we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we have Dr. Peter Michalos, who's going to give us an update on the viruses.
Can I cut my ad now?
Absolutely.
It's for the benefits of WABC Radio.
Well, thank you so much, Larry Kudlow.
Let's take a break.
You know what we're going to have? Shrinkflation. General Motors will make the cars 10% smaller, and then increase the price by 10%.
They can't
like candy bars.
Because they don't have the mineral resources to build the batteries.
Let's take a break.
Breaking news, WABC.
And that breaking news is coming from our resident medical genius, Dr. Peter Michalos. What do you got for us?
Well, it looks like the FDA is about to approve a third shot of the COVID-19 vaccines for immune-compromised patients, and that includes people with HIV, with cancer, immune-suppressed patients. For example, people who are transplant patients taking immune suppressants, and that represents 2.7% of the people in the United States who are immune-compromised. So this is a big deal, and this is why they're noticing that people who had the vaccines who are immune suppressed, they don't have as much of a reaction or get as sick after the vaccine because their immune system is not launching an intense immune reaction. So that's why Friday the CDC is going to meet, and it looks by Friday that will be approved. So that's great news. And the other great news is that the CDC has approved the Regeneron antibodies if you've been exposed to COVID-19 among a worker or a family member. And that will help you from disease.
Thank you, Dr. Michalos. And we're going to have you back tomorrow and have some more time to talk about it. Thank you, Ed Cox, Judge Weinberg, Kevin McCullough, and Lydia. Thank you, New York. We love you. God bless all of us, and God bless New York. And America.